Kiora, everyone. I'm Emmeline Pat Dahlstrom from SpaceBase, a social enterprise focused on catalyzing the space entrepreneurial ecosystem in New Zealand to solve challenges on Earth and beyond. You're listening to the SpaceBase podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Jim Hefke, the director of Auckland Program for Space Systems. He currently holds the position of professional teaching fellow at the University of Auckland and has been part of a team working with university and government to establish the Space Systems Institute for New Zealand. He also lectures in engineering systems, technology management, and engineering management. He holds an ME in manufacturing systems, a postgraduate business qualification in engineering management, and a postgraduate teaching qualification in academic practice. He has 40 years engineering experience in manufacturing, automation, and machine design. In this interview, we're going to talk about Jim's career and experiences, as well as the multitude of space projects and initiatives he's working on building New Zealand's space ecosystem. Welcome, Jim.
Yeah, hi, Emmeline. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So as I understand, you're not a Kiwi-born native and you came from Canada. So what brought you to New Zealand?
My wife, basically. I met my wife in Toronto, and she was a Kiwi wanting to come home, and I was looking for a changing career, so I followed her here. I have been here more than half my life now, so it's wow. it's a place I call home.
And back in Canada, were you already involved in space, or was it something that just was organically kind of like included in your career?
I wasn't really involved in space in Canada. The many of the companies, the jobs that I had in Canada dealt with the automotive and the aircraft manufacturing industry. So from a manufacturing perspective, but not space per se. Space was always sort of a hobby. I grew up during the era of the space race between the Soviet Union and the U.S., and so there was always things in the news, and I was always interested in it from a very young age.
And so when you migrated to New Zealand, it seems that you worked a lot in the manufacturing industry. How did you transition over or got the opportunity of actually even teaching about space?
Well, it's quite interesting, really. And to be honest with you, you know, you never really know where life's going to take you. And I've always been open to new ideas and new things and new challenges. I get bored easily. I like change. And, you know, I get, again, my background is in manufacturing and in industry and the business side of engineering, as well as the technical developments. All of those sorts of things, they open you up to a very big variety. You can get exposed to a lot of different industries in New Zealand. Space, as I said, was always a hobby. And I got to a point where some of my other hobbies that had gone by the by, and I got involved in amateur rocketry. Again, once I was in New Zealand, I was involved in that a little bit in Canada in my younger years. And getting involved with the New Zealand Rocketry Association, I got to meet a bunch of like-minded people and got to know people who were much more involved in the space side of things than I ever was. But I took an interest because, again, it was an opportunity. So I thought I'd take that opportunity and do something with it. And at the time, I'd started working for myself, so I had a little bit more flexibility in my lifestyle, if you will. And started looking at what was happening with education programs, because I knew rocketry was a good pathway for STEM education in intermediate and secondary schools. And there were, at that time, a few groups around who were quite involved with that sort of thing, trying to push things forward. So early on, I got involved with the Kiwi Space Foundation, and they put a few events on which were quite good. And we also also help support aerospace education, who have been for quite a number of years now putting programs into the schools around rocketry. And it became an interest of mine to try and get these programs embedded into the educational system a little bit more. And that's where the challenges started.
And the Rocketry Society, where is it based? Is it all over New Zealand? And how can people actually attend or be part of it?
Well, the nzrocketry.org.nz is the website for NZRA. The main cluster for that is in the Auckland and Waikato region. There is a the club has a launch site in the Waikato, and there's usually a launch once a month, a high-powered rocketry launch once a month, except in the winter months. And except during COVID-19, of course. Right. But there is now a new chapter for high-powered rocketry been started up in the Christchurch area, as well as small clusters for low-powered rocketry around the country, really. So it's a good place to get started, and I would highly recommend that people visit the website and the Facebook page for New Zealand Rocketry. And they can get some information on it there. It's good fun.
Yeah, sounds like a really great opportunity.
Yeah, I use it as well for, I had my students as part of the APSS program, one of their challenges is to create a small payload, and we launch it up to about a kilometer in altitude and then deploy it from the rocket, and it comes back under parachute and collects data on the way down. So it's... it's a good way to get students involved, because who doesn't like rockets, you know?
So you're the current director for the Program for Space Systems at University of Auckland. Can you tell us about what the program is about?
Yeah, so the APSS, the Auckland Program for Space Systems, it's actually that part of it. It's an undergraduate program that's open to any undergraduate students enrolled at the University of Auckland, although we specifically target second and third year, but it's not just for engineers or scientists. It's open to arts, it's open to business, it's open to law, it's open to education, it's open to everybody, because there are, space is such a diverse arena. It's not just the realm of engineers, it's not just the realm of scientists. My way of looking at it, so I got asked to set this program up back in 2016, there were really no courses on space per se in New Zealand at the time. There was some postgraduate research being done. Christchurch has done a lot of work, especially in guidance and control systems down there, and rocketry. But there really wasn't anything for the undergraduates. And my background in engineering management, sort of my view of everything is that it's, I found a lot of my engineering students were focused just on the engineering. And for me, you know, you can have the best engineering ideas, you can have the best scientific ideas, but the reality is you have to have a market, you have to be able to deploy these things in the real world. So it's trying to open up people's eyes and see how things fit into society. So one of the main task for the APSS is we run a challenge every year, and we challenge the students to identify a need for society, a problem for society, and then solve that societal need with a 1U CubeSat. And the idea can be anything that the students come up with, and it's completely open. So all of the challenges, all of the ideas are the students' own ideas. And we also try and force them into having a mixed disciplinary team. So for example, if you know you've got six mates are all engineers, well, that's great, but you need some other people on your team. You need some people with some business knowledge and some science knowledge, because we ask them to, as I say, identify the need, come up with a solution. We ask them to develop a business plan as much as a technical plan. They have to produce a poster, they have to produce a video. And the way we run the challenge is that we select three winners, and it's not a first, second, and third place, but it's a most benefit to New Zealand is one of the class winners. The most ambitious, which quite often is a little bit like, well, this is a really great idea, but man, it's never going to work in a 1U CubeSat. but good, you know, good on you for trying. And then we also have most likely to succeed. And the most likely to succeed isn't necessarily always the best idea, but it's the idea that's well planned out, well thought out, has all the elements we're looking for, but also has a good chance of succeeding in a 1U CubeSat, something that amateurs can build, and there's a very good chance of it actually succeeding. And that's what we do. So we do that every year, and the team that is selected as most likely to succeed, they then go on to build a 1U CubeSat. And we have finished three of those cycles now, and we're on the fourth. It's been delayed a little bit by COVID. But our first satellite is sitting in the clean room, ready to be launched. It should have been launched in July. That's been delayed due to COVID. I think now we're looking at an October launch. And that will actually be the first New Zealand satellite with an active payload that's been launched. So we're really looking at the beginning of something new here. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. So for the challenge, every time that you do the challenge and every main winner will have a payload that will actually go up and get launched?
Yes, so we have, so we build one satellite every year. Although having said that, we run it on a 2-year cycle. So the satellite's supposed to be completed by the end of the second year. But of course, like everything else in space, it's not. So we're kind of running a year behind with the first one and maybe 6 months behind with the second one. So APSS-1, our first satellite, as I say, it's built and ready to launch. It's been space qualified already. So it's gone through all of its tests and it's just sitting there waiting to go. Now it is, it involves a Langmuir probe, and the idea behind it is that it's going to measure electron activity in the upper atmosphere, which there is still atmosphere in low Earth orbit around 400 kilometers. Mm-hmm. The idea behind that one is that there's some research that suggests that electron activity increases or spikes just before an earthquake. So what they're going to try and do is measure electron activity and correlate that to earthquake activity. And if they can get some useful data out of it, it might help to become one tool in an arsenal of perhaps one day predicting earthquakes.
That's especially important for New Zealand.
Yeah.
So are the payloads, I'm assuming, will launch on Rocket Lab?
Yeah, so Rocket Lab will definitely be sending our payload up. That's who we have our launch agreement with at the moment. And we're really looking forward to it. Peter Beck has been quite supportive and working with the university. We've had some number of our students actually work at Rocket Lab as interns or part-time, even when they're studying.
Oh, that's great.
So it's really exciting to have them there to support us.
Is there an actual program that university students can actually become interns for Rocket Lab?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I think it's just standard standard internships. I mean, Rocket Lab take interns from lots of different places.
I see.
Yep.
Great. So the other thing that you're involved in, which is sounds super exciting, is the creation of the Space Studies Institute. Can you also tell us about what it is and what the goals are?
Yeah, well, the Auckland Space Institute itself, it's probably not something that I'm really that involved in, to be truthful. What that comes into now is the serious side of space, if you will. So if you look at the Auckland Program for Space Systems, for me, that's an opportunity for me to play with the children, if you will. There is a need, so space research is becoming more and more a focus in New Zealand, and we are attracting funding from overseas, and we're attracting students from overseas as well to do serious PhD research in the space field. And what the Auckland Space Institute is going to do is give us an umbrella facility to be able to coordinate all of these activities. And we've been very fortunate to attract some top level overseas people to look after that. Mm-hmm. We've got Catherine Qualtrough, who is an astrophysicist who spent a number of years overseas. She is coordinating a lot of the activities for the ASI. And of course, we have Professor Guglielmo Aglietti, mm-hmm. Who has an international reputation in space research. And we were very lucky to get him from Surrey Space Systems in the UK. So he is now resident in New Zealand and taking the lead for the Auckland Space Institute. And he has also brought a number of his research team in from overseas. So we're really hitting the ground running with research. And that's on top of agreements that we have in place with the DLR in Germany. And students that are already working on a number of research projects that have been funded from overseas and locally as well. Dr. John Cater is the engineering research lead for a lot of these things. And Dr. Nicholas Rattenbury is the science lead on a lot of the research projects that are currently going on as well.
That's great. And are there any specific areas of space research that the Institute is going to be focusing on?
Good question. We have two areas of focus at the moment for John Cater's research, for example, and that is in-space propulsion and sample return. So looking at technologies to allow us to get samples back into mm-hmm. Earth's atmosphere without being destroyed in the process. And also being able to propel and maneuver small satellites in space. I think a lot of what Professor Aglietti's research team is based around is space situational awareness. So what's up there, predicting orbits, being able to communicate.
Also, you mentioned earlier on that back in 2016, there are no space-related courses. Has it changed now? Are there degrees today or planned courses that are coming up soon in the future?
There are some planned courses coming up. So the University of Auckland is looking at a master's program, taught master's for space studies, as well as a certificate program. And I believe the University of Canterbury is also looking at a program. I'm not 100% sure just what they're developing. But I think they might be looking at an undergraduate degree.
That is good to know. And then you're also involved in the POC for the global organization called UNISEC. And I know they're kind of like focused on education as well, on science and technology. And this was founded in Japan, which is really interesting because I actually know the Secretary General pretty well as a friend. Can you tell more about the program?
Yeah, so the UNISEC program and the CANSAT Leaders Training Program is sort of where space started to get serious for me. A number of years ago, as I say, there wasn't much happening in New Zealand, and I was struggling to get programs integrated into the secondary school's curriculum. Through my contacts in the Kiwi Space Foundation, I found out about the CANSAT Leaders Training program that was taking place in Sapporo in Japan. I didn't have any luck getting sponsorship. Nobody was really interested in paying for me to go there. So as I was working for myself, I paid for the tuition fees and the fares and accommodation and everything, and I sent myself to CLTP6, CANSAT Leader Training Program 6, for a few weeks in Japan. And that was kind of a real eye-opener for me, and it was a good thing as well. So what the CLTP program was about was trying to teach the teachers, if you will, about how to develop a satellite program that could be taught in schools without actually going into space. So essentially payloads that would be launched with a small rocket an amateur rocket. And that's something that I've carried on into the APSS. So we have a program called a PSAT program, and that's building a small payload and launching it to about a kilometer in altitude on a high-powered amateur rocket here in New Zealand. But it introduced me to a lot of different people as well. So UNISEC Global, University Space Engineering Consortium Global, are very focused on trying to get as many universities worldwide as possible into space. So that's really their goal. And we had nothing in New Zealand. And I went and I took this course, and I made a lot of contacts, and I became the point of contact in New Zealand, because there, as I said before, there wasn't anything here really. Now, to be truthful, I was kind of underqualified for this, because UNISEC Global, I was only teaching part-time. Really, I was an industrial engineer. And they were probably a bit hesitant, and rightly so, to make me point of contact. But if they hadn't have, you know, things would have been very different, because I was able to come back to New Zealand. And of course, now I had a little bit of qualification behind me. So, you know, I could get some cards done up and say, hey, you know, here, I'm the point of contact for university, for UNISEC Global, you know. So people did take me a little bit more seriously because of that. And part and parcel with that was I was going to a lot of different events and just talking to people and trying to get things going. As I say, things were pretty quiet in the space industry. Rocket Lab hadn't launched yet at all. And a lot of people didn't think they ever would. So there was I had a good contact in ATEED, the Auckland Tourism and Economic Development Board. And there was a conference coming up on the future of farming. And he said, well, look, we haven't really got, it's not an open conference, it's a closed conference, it's an invitation only sort of a thing. We don't really have a lot of exhibitors, but would you like to come along and exhibit something? So I had, I got a hold of the people that I'd contacted or got to know in Japan, and they arranged for the University of Tokyo and Canon Systems, paid for two people and a satellite to come down, and we attended. We sat out in the lobby of the Future Farming Conference. So every time there was a coffee break, we'd talk to people and show them our satellite. And at the same time, shortly thereafter, I arranged for a public forum meeting for our two guests, and the three of us came and talked. But also, ATEED at the time, they were quite keen on getting things going. They arranged an invitation-only conference for us using their contacts list. And that's where we met a lot of people from industry and education and defense and a lot of other places. And that was sort of the beginning, really. There were people there from the University of Auckland who I didn't know, even though I was teaching there part-time, but I didn't know them at that time. And from those events, I started finding it a little bit easier to contact people and talk to people about space. And that's really what led sort of a year later to a phone call that I got from the University of Auckland, from the Dean of Engineering, Dean Nick Smith, saying that they wanted to set up a program and would I like to come and start it up and run it. So it was sort of all out of that opportunity that I took. And
that's great.
Yeah. I got asked at, I was actually at the UNISEC Global meeting in November this year, November, December. And I got asked by a student from Egypt, you know, what do you do? How do you get things going when there is no industry, there is no interest from government and those sorts of things? And I don't think I answered it very well at the time. But thinking about it sort of in retrospect, I mean, what it comes down to, if you want to do something, so how badly do you want it? How patient are you? And are you sort of willing to be able to walk away from it when it is successful? So, I mean, for me, it was like, well, I wanted it badly enough that I took money out of my own pocket and went to Japan, and then kept organizing things based on that. Patience, well, it took a few years after that, a couple of years, or at least a year and a half, maybe two, you know, it took some time after that before the program got going. And then once the program did get going, the undergraduate program got going, then there was quite a bit more work and quite a bit more patience waiting for things to happen and actually making things happen. So we have the Auckland Space Institute, and you know, I was involved in talking to people right at the beginning of the New Zealand Space Agency and a lot of these other programs that are going. And now that the APSS program I started is into its fourth cycle and fairly successful, and we've attracted some philanthropic funding, you know, we've got the space agency, and I wrote up a plan sort of 5 years ago, what I'd like to see, 3 years ago, what I'd like to see in a 5-year plan. And almost all of those things have now come to fruition. And it's at the point now where I could walk away from all of it and be quite happy, because it's got legs of its own now. And it's going to keep growing, and it's going to keep active, and it's really satisfying.
Oh, that's actually a great story. And it's also a great segue to, I guess, my next question is, what would you tell somebody who is really passionate about space, but also just doesn't know where to start here in New Zealand?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think here in New Zealand in particular, you know, you have to look at how does space fit into New Zealand Inc., if you will. Okay, so New Zealand is never going to have a government-sponsored program like NASA. Mm-hmm. We're just not big enough for that. So New Zealand is all about the niche. What can we do better than everyone else can do? Mm-hmm. We don't have to be big. We don't have to be huge. We tend to do things small, but we do them very, very well. And the other thing is that I'd tell people that are interested in space is just one part of what you have to do to be in space. There's a whole lot of other things. You've got to look at the big picture. What's the business side of it? What's the societal need? What are all these other things? If you look at, I gave a talk a few years ago at, I think it was a Raising the Bar talk. And I got thinking about what made Rocket Lab successful. So yes, you've got a Peter Beck who has been driven since he was a young lad, highly intelligent, you know, very keen on getting things done. But we look around the world and there are literally hundreds of space startups around the world that haven't gotten as far as Rocket Lab has. Mm-hmm. And there are hundreds who have started and already failed. What did Rocket Lab do differently? What Rocket Lab had was not just the technology, okay? So Peter leveraged existing technologies right to the limit, pushed them right to the limit before starting to create anything new. The other thing, there are three things that make Rocket Lab different. One's the technology, okay? So pushing those limits. The second one is funding. Mm-hmm. So to enable something like that, you've got to be always actively looking for funding. And in New Zealand, sometimes that just means that you have to go overseas for the funding, as is in the case of Rocket Lab USA, as the company is now known. You know, we hold it near and dear to our hearts in New Zealand, but it is now an American-based company. That's simply a finance issue. But the other thing that Rocket Lab did different or managed to do well was on the regulatory and paperwork side. So they say quite often that every launch, 60% of the effort that goes into every launch is actually regulatory and paperwork. That the rocket itself is one of the smallest parts. It's the tip of the iceberg that you see. A lot of engineers and scientists lose sight of the fact that you need the funding, you need the finance, so you need to have a business goal. But you also, especially in space, there is a very prescriptive regulatory regime that's international. And if you do not consider that as part of your plan right from the very beginning, you are going to struggle if you're mm-hmm. trying to play catch up afterwards. We're very lucky in New Zealand. With MB and the New Zealand Space Agency, the way that they're set up to enable space yeah. in New Zealand, where if you look overseas, it's very prescriptive. You have to do A, B, C, D, E. In New Zealand, it's more of a I suppose, a guiding light, if you will. It's not quite so prescriptive here. So it makes it easier for people to get into space in New Zealand. But at the end of the day, you still have these international regulations that everybody has to live with. And that includes even a small satellite from the University of Auckland. You know, we still have to jump through all of the hoops of ITAR and the international radio regulations and everything else, you know, and that's just part and parcel of the environment. So if you want to get into space, keep your eyes wide open. Don't focus quite so much just on the tech. The tech is cool and the tech is fun, and that's what we all love. You want to be successful, we need to look at, you need to look at the bigger picture. Don't lose sight of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to, you mentioned about niche markets in New Zealand and also your background in the manufacturing industry. Do you see any synergies between the manufacturing industry today and the potential opportunities for future manufacturing in space that New Zealand could latch onto as a niche market?
I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to. So manufacturing in space is a new industry, but we have some advanced knowledge in this country and in materials and in manufacturing systems with Industry 4. We have quite a good base in titaniums and light metals already. We've got artificial intelligence, which is all of these things in space. When you're talking about something really, really remote, you need to know what you're doing, but you also need to be able to design and build the equipment that can operate autonomously, if you will. Mm-hmm. So all of these things are very important. And I think there's no reason why we couldn't carve out a niche in those areas.
Great. So my last set of questions is really about recommendations. And so I always ask, do you have any either favorite books, websites, or anybody that you follow that you think would be good for individuals to be looking at?
You know, I suppose I'm a bit of a dreamer when it comes down to it. I always look for new things. I always look for new adventures. I tend not to follow other people. I've got a Twitter account and I never twit. You know, I've got a Facebook account that I hardly ever put anything on. So I do tend to think that look to things for inspiration. So I read news articles and I do follow people. I don't follow them religiously, but I do look at what other people are doing. But have a bit of faith in yourself. If you've got ideas, don't think, well, you know, I can never make that happen. Think about how could I make that happen? So, you know, you look at me, I'm a kid from a very small town in a very rural area of Canada. I mean, I was born and raised in a town of 500 people. And, you know, I've now moved across the world and I'm running a space program at a university. You know, nothing is impossible. Absolutely nothing is impossible. And if you want to make something happen, just think about, how can I make this happen? Not all of these problems that are in my way, and I'll never be able to do that. You just need to think, you know, if you've got an idea and you want something to happen, how can you do it? And that's the way to look at it. It's positive attitude. It's not negative attitude. It's not what are the obstacles in my way. It's what are the challenges that I need to overcome.
Yeah, those are great inspirational recommendations. Before we close, do you have any other parting words that you might want to impart to space enthusiasts in New Zealand?
If you're really interested in space, you know, go for it. Go talk to the Rocket Labs, but there's lots of other businesses around as well that are getting involved in space or are creating products that can be or could be used in space. But also broaden your horizon a little bit. A lot of people see space as the end goal. In reality, space is just the new location. The end goal is, how can we use space to benefit society? How can we use space to create a better life here on Earth? And that's the real goal of space. So anything that you look at, open your horizons a little bit and take a world view And when you do that, I think you'll find that there are a lot more opportunities out there and a lot of businesses that you may not think of as being a space-related business. You don't have to be a rocket lab or a Dawn Aerospace or a NASA, you know.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jim, for sharing your thoughts and insights to the New Zealand community and beyond. To our audience, if you like our work and would like to support us, please check us out on spacebase.co. Thanks for listening and see you next time.